It is indeed May Day, the Celtic celebration of all things of bounteousness and fecundity, a day to celebrate and explore and express our creativity, our sexuality, and to enjoy the bounty that the world is sharing with us at this time. Last year, I started what I hope will be a tradition of preaching on matters of sexuality and body image on this day, and I've chosen today to talk about pornography. Part of our culture, for better or for worse. This is not a recommendation, but I've got some statistics from Pornhub. It is your site for access to porn. 107 million people visit Pornhub monthly. In fact, 2.4 million views per hour go through Pornhub. And I'd also like you to know that they're offering a $25,000 college scholarship through their Pornhub Cares site. Now, what are we talking about when we say pornography? It's kind of like art, right? I'll know it when I see it. I always like to look up the definition of these things to get a sense of what we're really talking about. And according to my favorite source, Wikipedia, pornography is defined as printed or visual material containing the explicit description or display of sexual organs or activity intended to stimulate erotic rather than aesthetic or emotional feelings. Let me just repeat that last part. Intended to stimulate erotic rather than aesthetic or emotional feelings. Now, let me be clear about my intentions today. I'm not preaching against porn. Written erotica, sexual imagery have been a part of human culture probably as long as there have been humans. Molly read from the Song of Solomon, the Hebrew scriptures 4,000 years old. I imagine cavemen would draw pictures of erotica on the walls of their caves to share with one another. Erotica can be liberating, can be helpful for stimulating sexual desire. It has an important place. Thinking of Prince reminds me of the creative ways that he used erotica in his music and his videos. Stimulating, creative, energizing. My concern with pornography is that it is ubiquitous. When I was thinking about writing this sermon, I remembered an episode from the TV show Friends. It was on in the 90s and into the early 2000s, a story of six young people in their 20s living in New York City, one of the most popular shows on TV. Remember one particular episode where Chandler and Joey, those of you who are familiar with the show may remember this, somehow, for some reason, they stumbled on a porn channel on their TV that was not charging anything. They were very, very excited about this. And so they were incredibly worried that if they turned off the TV or changed the channel, they would lose the free porn. And so they kept the TV on 24 hours a day to not lose access to the free porn. Now, what this meant was friends would come in and they would comment about the porn. Oh, look at that. Wow. Phoebe, those of you who remember Phoebe, had some pretty interesting things to say about it. But this porn was the backdrop of their days until, of course, something happened where they lost the free access to the porn. Of course, I thought about that episode because sometimes it feels like we have the porn channel on all the time in our culture, in our world, in our media. There's a term for that, porn culture. Defines sex in our country in a lot of ways, whether it's millions of little Miley Cyruses and Kim Kardashians texting pictures of themselves naked or in sexualized poses to their friends, or whether it comes through in what we see on our TV, What was X-rated in the 70s is now on mainstream TV at 8 o'clock on Wednesday night. Soft porn is now normalized. The evidence of that being the Victoria's Secret Christmas special, where scantily clad women parade down a runway to the tunes of the latest music. We have issues of people watching porn on planes. The San Francisco Library has now put privacy screens on their computers so people who want access to porn in the library can see it without disturbing others. And I had an experience waiting for a red light and noticing that the people in the car next to me were watching porn on a video screen that projected into the back of their car. So, what is the problem with porn culture besides its ubiquitousness? You have to wade into a question of values, challenged about being prudish. Of course, there are stronger issues, the issues of violence towards women, objectification of women, problems of porn addiction. The impact of porn on our society has been hotly debated. You can find all of these conversations in the New York Times, in the Atlantic Monthly, the Washington Post, Time Magazine, any of the news outlets that you may have access to. But I think a steady diet of porn can't be healthy for an individual, let alone a culture. And for no other reason for the individual than it can be isolating. It is understood that many heavy porn users have mental health issues. I think right now with the porn culture, we're seeing the results of the freedoms of the sexual revolution in the 60s mixed in with the sense of entitlement and individualism that we see now in our culture. Porn allows you to have it just the way you want it without being bothered by another person's needs. Now, Utah doesn't want to have anything to do with porn. They've just recently passed a law saying that it is a public health hazard and funding research and fostering discussion on the dangers of pornography. Utah, a Mormon state, the home of the Mormon Church, has the highest number of porn users per capita in the United States. As a member of ours who is a former Mormon told me, in addition to porn, the Mormons consider masturbation to be a terrible sin, which of course goes hand in hand, pardon the pun, with porn. Mormons regularly question their members about their sexual practices. Are they pushing their morality on others by challenging porn in the public square? Is there any value to this law that they proposed? Also coming to a billboard near you out of Utah is the Porn Kills Love campaign. It's very active in the Bay Area. They've chosen the Bay Area because they think that's a good place to begin the dialogue about porn. Porn Kills Love. Their website says, in real life, real love requires a real person. Okay, I don't disagree with that. I know what they're trying to get at, but I find it curious that they're focusing on the word love. Porn doesn't have anything to do with love. Porn is about sex. And porn itself does not kill love. It's the overdependence on porn, the overdependence on it for erotic stimulation that can kill love. It's the inappropriate expectations that porn creates that can put a damper on your sex life with a real person or damper on your relationship as a whole. The husband of a friend of mine would watch soft porn videos and then complain that she was not good-looking or obedient enough for his taste. I think that's part of the main problem that we're talking about today, what's called the sexpectations of porn. It kind of claims the narrative of what sex is supposed to be. And some of that has to do with the power of the visual image. Porn culture dominates our ideas about sex, and we don't have anything that counters it very well. It's a cultural touchstone that presents sexuality in a very limited way, and we haven't found the response, the conversation, that presents a more holistic view of sex and sexuality. Some of you may have heard the sex therapist Ian Kerner on Morning Edition Sunday last week talking about the Utah law. He said that the problems with porn are the result of our long history of discomfort around sexuality. They're the result of our long history of discomfort around sexuality, that our sexual revolution is incomplete. I also find that I agree with an adult industry video group that said in response to the Utah law, the true public health crisis are the socially conservative politicians, like those who have fought adequate science-based sexual health education for 35 years. We should live in a society where sexuality is spoken about openly and discussed in nuanced and educated ways and not stigmatized. In the absence of this healthy conversation about sex, this nuanced, holistic conversation about sex, porn will fill the gap. And porn is how many of our youth learn about sex. A study that I read in the New York Times said that 42% of online users age 10 to internet users, not porn users, internet users 10 to 17 had seen porn. So of teens on the internet, 47% had seen porn, and 66% of those had seen it unwillingly. Maybe stumbled across it or friends had it on their computer at home. Parents acknowledge that it's almost impossible to stop their kids from seeing online porn. The same study found that 93% of boys and 63% of girls were exposed to online pornography during their adolescence. But the real truth is that because of the focus on abstinence education in our schools, because many of our schools only teach about not having sex, the risks and problems with having sex, that teens seek out pornography to learn. So what do they learn when they use pornography as a sex education tool? They learn that male sexual pleasure defines the success of a sexual encounter. They learn that reciprocity in sexual engagement is rare. They learn that communication to partners is very limited. They learn that women will always give in. What don't they learn if they use sex education or pornography for sex education? They don't learn that sex is an expression of love and caring between people. They don't learn that communication and reciprocity are a critical part of intimacy. And they don't learn that sex can be more powerful and pleasurable when partners know and trust each other. Now, our wonderful Our Whole Lives program in Unitarian Universalism counteracts so much of this. It's a sexuality education program, starts with third grade and goes all the way up to adults. In that program, when we start the program, and we're going to be offering it next year to our 7th through 9th graders, I believe.
Two levels
next year. For the junior high group, we meet with the parents before the program starts, and we show them these drawings that their kids will see. They're drawings of sexual behavior, explicit drawings that are used in the discussion of various sexual acts. And when I look at those drawings, and when I compare them to what kids see online, those drawings seem almost quaint. They seem like such a small way to counteract the impact of the intense, visible aggression of pornography. I taught Al when I was an intern at the Palo Alto congregation a few years ago, and I remember one kid, every single time, 12-year-old, would bring up what he saw on porn. He'd bring it up so much that finally I just started to respond and offer an alternative to what he saw, to challenge what he saw. And I've been a little frustrated that the Al program hasn't done enough to counteract the impact of pornography. Now, when I've read in my reading and research about this topic, Denmark kept coming up in many of the articles I read and sexuality education in Denmark. In fact, there was one study that compared a complement of U.S. teens to a complement of Danish teens. I think there were 300 in each group. And in comparison, the U.S. teens were more sexually active at a younger age. They had more encounters with more partners. And they were less likely to use birth control than their Danish counterparts. It's okay as long as it's not porn on your phone. We're fine. Now, for the Danish kids, their early sexual activity most often took place in a respectful and loving relationship where they communicated openly with their partners about what felt good and what didn't, and about what sexual activities they wanted to engage in. The Danish kids had more comfort with their bodies and were more in touch with their own pleasure than were their American counterparts. Sounds like the Dutch teens have healthier sex lives than many adults in the United States. So what's the difference? Dutch parents, teachers, doctors, families talk to kids early and often about the joys and responsibilities of sex. In contrast to our country, girls were taught about pleasure. And young men were taught to expect to combine sex with love. One thing that really stood out for me in these discussion about the Danish approach to sex education is that their kids were exposed to pornography as well, and they chose to bring the pornography into the sex education by deconstructing it, by showing it, and then stopping it and saying, who's in charge here? Who's being served here? What's not happening here? How do you feel about this? Questioning and challenging all the implicit assumptions that porn carries. The Danish kids present quite a contrast to the norms in our culture, where our adolescents often grow into young men and women with very unhealthy attitudes about sex. Some of our young people might appreciate the advice that are coming out of a group of men in their 20s who were actively engaged in porn from an early age. These young men had such a serious porn habit that many of them could not achieve an erection without porn, could not engage in sex with a partner. There was a recent article in Time magazine about these young men, and they referred to their adolescence as being marinated in porn. They formed support groups to help each other to overcome their dependence on porn. One of the leaders, when thinking about what he would tell his child when he had one, said, I would tell my son that all the super stimulating things like porn, junk food, and drugs can be fun. They can be pleasurable temporarily. However, they also have the power to desensitize you to normal, natural things. Another one of the leaders of these groups said, I wasted years of my life looking for a computer or a mobile phone to provide something that it was not capable of providing. The movie Don John is about that guy that in his 20s who was marinated in porn. This fellow John watched porn every day, multiple times. It doesn't mean that he didn't have sex with actual women. But sex for him was about conquest. That was where the satisfaction came from. In fact, actual sex was rather boring for him, and he would masturbate to porn after every sexual encounter. He said that he used porn because he could lose himself in it. He could have it exactly the way he wanted. He could relax and let go, something that he didn't find possible when you were having sex with another person. Now, Don John in this movie happened to come across a woman who somehow got through to him, an older woman who showed him a different way. She taught him through conversations and through sexual activity the power of letting go in the company of someone you care about. She taught him about reciprocity and sharing of pleasure. Most importantly, he learned about the power of intimacy, looking into the eyes of your partner when you're making love, not the blank eyes of a woman on the porn screen. The eyes of a real living human with their own needs and pleasures that can mirror you, mirror your own needs and pleasures. He learned about the power of communication, of connection. He learned that sex can be a beautiful part of life, that sex is about wholeness, your whole self, your emotional, physical, spiritual being being realized and fulfilled. He learned that sex is about connection, love, trust, and joy. So may our children learn. So may it be for us. Blessed be and amen.